How's it going, everyone? And welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we have a fun episode today. We have our official UFC Saudi Arabian predictions. Israel Adesanya takes on Nazarudin Imamov in the men's middleweight division. We have a lot of fun fights on that card. We have predictions for every single fight going down this Saturday in Saudi Arabia at the Riyadh Center. I think it's called Riyadh Season or something. They got a really weird name for it. We'll have to see. But also on today's episode, we're gonna be giving our reactions to the two teams that are in the Super Bowl. That's right, the conference games took place, and we now know which two teams will be in the Super Bowl. The WWE Royal Rumble PLE, they call it, premium live event instead of a pay-per-view like the UFC has. But the premium live event, the WWE Royal Rumble, probably the second biggest event of the year for WWE, is also going down this Saturday. So we'll be giving our predictions for the matches going down on that card. New things in pop culture, new UFC fights. There's a lot of new things going on. I recently was the head coach, not actually, but kind of like a funny head coach for my friend's hockey team, and my voice is absolutely shot right now, but that will not stop us from delivering another amazing episode of the Surprise Jab Podcast. So let's not waste any time. We got a lot of fun UFC fights to tell you all about. Let's get right on into it. For starters, we have some fun ones going down in the men's light heavyweight division and middleweight division. In the light heavyweight division at UFC 314 in Miami, Florida, the number 8 ranked light heavyweight Nikita Krylov back in action after 2 freaking years as he takes on the number 11th ranked Dominic Reyes. Dominic Reyes, probably my comeback fighter of the year. He had 2 massive wins in 2024, and he's now primed for a top 10 opponent in Nikita Krylov. Nikita, last time he fought, manhandled Ryan Spann in a competitive round 1 matchup. But now, I mean, we'll just have to see. Dominic Reyes is now on a little win streak. Nikita Krylov is coming off of a layoff, which is unfortunate. I'll be interested to see this one, but this should be on the main card for UFC 314, which is rumored to have Ilia Topuria versus Alexander Volkanovski too as the main event. So exciting stuff going down in Miami in April. Heading to the men's middleweight division, this is your main event for UFC Vegas 104 going down March 15th as the number 7th ranked middleweight Marvin Vettori is back after his 2-year hiatus to take on the number 10 ranked Roman Dolidze. Roman is on a little win streak. He's beaten Kevin Holland and Anthony Smith, so I wouldn't call it the most impressive wins. These two actually fought in 2022, and Marvin Vettori won a 3-round decision, but now we get 5 rounds. I'm still back in the Italian dream, Marvin Vettori. I'm just happy to see them back in action. These are two of the most durable dudes out there. I actually think neither of them have been finished before in their careers, so this should be a hard-hitting matchup, and I'm all here for it. Bit of a lesser one for our next few. UFC Vegas 103 going down March 1st at the Apex has a heavyweight matchup as Austin Lane gets another shot in the UFC following his win over Robles Despange as he takes on the 9-0 debuting Mario Pinto. Mario Pinto dominant so far outside the UFC, won on Dana White's Contender Series, and honestly, I think he should probably win this one. Austin Lane, he's kind of had a rough go in the UFC, been knocked out a couple times, but hey, you never know what can happen. The luck can always turn around. Here's another one for that UFC Vegas 103 card, this time in the men's bantamweight division, as Douglas Silva de Andrade is back in action. The 40-year-old takes on the Minnesota man, John Castaneda. John Castaneda, 21-7 professionally, does fight out of Minneapolis, so I'll have to be rooting for him in this one. But do not count out Douglas Silva de Andrade. This guy holds a win over Marlon Vera and Henan Barrow. Okay, he's as legit as they come, and his age may not be in his favor per se, but nonetheless, still a fun fighter. Here's one for that card as well, Vegas 103, featherweight action, as Ricardo Ramos, 17-6 professionally, takes on Chepe Mariscal. Chepe is 4-0 in the UFC. He's coming on a storm, beating Damon Jackson, Jack Jenkins, Morgan Cherie. He has been an absolute dog, and you know, just another stepping stone here in Ricardo Ramos. I'm easily back in Chepe Mariscal here, and Chepe was linked to a fight with Dan Ige before Dan Ige went and took on Diego Lopez, so I'm kind of surprised they aren't giving him a higher-ranked opponent, but nonetheless, Chepe Mariscal should get it done. Another fun one here for UFC Seattle as Billy Ray Goff, 1-1 in the UFC, is back in action as he takes on Adam Fugit. I like this matchup. Both guys are pretty average as it comes, and this will be a real telltale of who belongs in the UFC. I'd probably back Billy Ray Goff for this one, but I mean, you never know. these two can show up. It's, you know, it's going to be on the prelims for UFC Seattle. I'm just happy to be getting these random cards in random American cities like UFC Seattle. Here's one that I'm stoked for. This one for UFC 313, March 8th, going down in Vegas, which I do not think I'll be attending, as tickets are just way too expensive. Like, it's actually absurd. You have to be rich to go to a UFC event. But men's lightweight action as King Green, that's right, Bobby Green, formerly Bobby Green, now King Green, takes on Mauricio Rufi. Mauricio Rufi, 11-1 professionally, 2-0, holds wins over James Lontop and Jamie Mullarkey, fights out of the Fighting Nerds, of course, Kyle Barallo, Carlos Prates, Gene Silva, that dominant gym. And King Green, I mean, you know, has some wins over Jim Miller, Grant Dawson, Tony Ferguson, and then also has losses to Jalen Turner, Paddy Pimblett. You never know what King Green you're going to get, but this is a perfect fight for Mauricio Rufi to see if he belongs anywhere near the top of the lightweight division. Bobby Green is the ultimate gatekeeper. More lightweight action, this one for UFC 314, going down in Miami, as Jim Miller takes on Chase Hooper. I didn't know this matchup was inevitable. This matchup was inevitable. Chase Hooper is coming off a massive round one submission of Clay Guida. Jim Miller is coming off of a nasty knockout of some other random Jimbo he was fighting. Actually, I think it was a submission or something. But Jim Miller, 38-10. I mean, actually, 38-18. This dude is freaking, wow, veteran as they come. I actually think he's approaching, I want to say it's 60 professional fights or something. He's approaching 50 UFC fights. He's getting up there. It's just unfortunate to see him take on Chase Hooper. Chase Hooper, 15-3-1. I think he's 4-0 or 5-0 at lightweight, all of them finishes. It's going to be tough. This one's going to be tough for me because I know how good both of these guys are. We're going to have to wait till we get closer to this matchup before I actually pick a winner in my eyes, because both of them are super, super good. I love both of them so, so much. Women's strawweight action. This one in UFC Mexico City, March 29th. There we go. As Lupita Lupi Godinez, the number 11th ranked woman, takes on the unranked Julia Pilastri. Julia, 13-4, 1-1 in the UFC, is getting a shot here against Lupi Godinez. Lupi is a 12-fight UFC veteran, 12-5 overall. Holds wins over Tabitha Ritchie, Cynthia Calvillo. I'm a little surprised here. I'm not going to lie, I'm a little surprised that Lupi Godinez is fighting down. You know, I'd honestly thought she'd be fighting up. But hey, I won't complain. She'll probably be back in the win category, and I would love to see that. Two more fight news I got for you here. Men's flyweight action as the number 8 ranked Asu Almabayev is no longer taking on Steve Ersig. It's rumored Steve Ersig is taking on Brandon Moreno at UFC Mexico, which I think makes no sense. Instead, Asu Almabayev, who was 21-2, 4-0 in the UFC on a 19-fight winning streak, is taking on the unranked Alan Nascimento, 2-1 in the UFC. I mean, he's been pretty mid. I'm going to be honest, he's been pretty average. And this should be around a 3-round decision for Asu Almabayev. But that one's for UFC Vegas 103. UFC Vegas 103 is filling out fast. Let me just let you know that. They're filling up a lot of fights on that card. And the final fight news for you, as Alexander Topura, the younger brother of Vito Topura, will be making his UFC debut against Colby Thickneys. That's right, his last name is Thickneys. Colby is 7-0. Absolutely love that nickname. Alexander Topura, 5-1. He was originally supposed to take on Cody Haddon. It's been a tough route to get Alexander Topura to the UFC, but hopefully he can take on Colby. Colby is stepping in on just about a week's notice, or 2 weeks, from UFC 312 in Sydney, Australia. So thank you for Colby for stepping in, but I just want to see Alexander Topura fight and see if he is ready for the UFC. So a lot of fun fights going down in the UFC. I'm excited to see where all these end up. Other than that, not too many other big fight news. I think people were saying that Dustin Poirier may be fighting Paddy Pimblett. I don't know any validity to that. I'm not going to quote any of that. Other news going on in the pop culture world. Insidious 6 has been delayed a year to August 21st, 2026, in the first of our top 10 new things in pop culture. Going to be honest, Insidious is just demonic. It's evil. I'm staying away from that. It's a no-go for Zachary. Number 2, Darren Aronofsky's crime thriller Caught Stealing releases on August 29th in theaters. The film follows a former baseball player plunged into the criminal underworld of 90s New York City. It stars Austin Butler, Zoe Kravitz, Regina King, Matt Smith, Vincent D'Onofrio, and Bad Bunny. Talk about a cast right there. And if Austin Butler's involved, I want to be involved. Number three, the first trailer for the new Smurfs movie will release at the Super Bowl on February 9th. And they're also going to be releasing the new Jurassic World Rebirth trailer on the Super Bowl, which is good because I'm going to need something to watch while I have to watch the abysmalness of the, as we'll speak about in a bit, Eagles and Chiefs. Number three, only two of the three Marvel movies releasing this year will get a teaser at the Super Bowl. Superman will not get a teaser at the Super Bowl. Instead, they'll debut a new sneak peek during the Puppy Bowl. How adorable. How adorable. Marvel is kind of in the gutter right now. They're going to really need to make a comeback this year. I'm going to be honest. We'll have to see. Number four, Benedict Cumberbatch now says he is in Avengers Doomsday despite his previous comments that he wasn't. He says, "I got that wrong. I'm in the next one. Don't ever believe anything I say." Well, if we're not supposed to believe anything you say, you just said that you are in this new one. Does that mean he's lying about that? Ooh, I just caught him in another lie. How's that feel, Benedict? Number five, Terrifier 4 is in the works. Damien Leon calls the film an utterly satisfying conclusion. I will finally reveal Art's origin. Well, I've never been interested in Terrifier as it's literally like a snuff film where they just massacre fake dead bodies, which could very well be real bodies. I have no interest in that. It's honestly really weird to me. Really weird. I just have no interest in it. Number six, Together, the movie will release on August 1st in theaters. The film follows a couple's move to the countryside as it triggers a supernatural incident that drastically alters their relationship and physical form. It stars Alison Brie and Dave Franco. That sounds creepy. Why are we making all these weird freaking movies? Can we just make a good old-fashioned American movie or something? Something fun, not something that's going to keep me up at night all scared about what's going to happen. Number seven, Jake Gyllenhaal will officially star in a supernatural romantic thriller directed by M. Night Shyamalan. The film is based on an original story co-written by Shyamalan and novelist Nicholas Sparks. Are you kidding me? What's up with this supernatural, with dealing with all these spirits and stuff? I have no idea what to make of all this. I'm literally losing my mind. Literally, you know, you say like it's funnily, like literally, that's me trying to comprehend what's up with all these weird new movies. No words for any of this. Really. What's all this new pop culture nonsense? I need some fun news. Number eight, I'm not even going to talk about that. It's about a gay couple starring in a movie. We're not even going to go there. We're going to hold back any thoughts we have. Number eight, there's got to be some good news in here. Michael B. Jordan and Ryan Coogler's vampire thriller Sinners. That's right, Michael B. Jordan plays two different characters in the film. You also have Hailee Steinfeld in there as a vampire. I'm going to be honest, it looks kind of dumb and kind of scary at the same time. I have no idea what to make of that. Number nine, guys, I can't lie, there's nothing really good going on in the pop culture world. A lot of just news about stuff. Here you go. Christopher Walken says, "I don't have technology. I only have a satellite dish in my house. I don't have a cell phone. I've never emailed, or what do you call it? Twittered," he said. Look, Christopher Walken, I've heard some weird things from. Apparently, he is a really weird guy, according to Mel Gibson. And I don't know. He does give off kind of weird vibes. Christopher Walken, not really big on technology. Does not really surprise me. And at number 10, this is a perfect way to round out our top 10 new updates in pop culture, as Quentin Tarantino says he won't be directing his final movie for a while yet. He's currently writing a stage play as his next project and might direct a movie adaptation of his stage play if it's a effing smash hit. So Quentin Tarantino, he's made a lot of legendary movies, Inglourious Bastards, which I gotta rewatch, The Django Unchained, which I really gotta rewatch, and I'll never forget the viewing experience I had for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Such a great conclusion to such a great movie. That was just one of my favorite movies I think I've seen. I always love how he retells history. I think it's fantastic. And I don't know what his last movie's gonna be, but I really hope he ends it all with a bang. I've seen some of his clips from him on the Joe Rogan Show, and he's just such a goofy dude, and he just loves movies, and so do I. What's face Quentin Tarantino, but I don't love feet. Let me tell you, he's got a foot fetish, and I will happily pass on that. But those are all the new updates we have in pop culture. A lot of weird stuff going in the pop culture world, but let me just be real with you, it's Hollywood. I would expect nothing less. Another fun activity that happens once a year in January, usually, but I guess it's happening February 1st this year, is the Royal Rumble. So the men's Royal Rumble, female Royal Rumble, whatever you want to call it, the Royal Rumble PLE is this WWE, of course, professional wrestling event where 30 superstars, 30 wrestlers come out one by one every 60 seconds, and it's always something crazy that happens. There's always surprise entrance, always big moments happen here, and whoever wins this usually is the man who main events WrestleMania. He gets a title shot no matter what, and this year, going down at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis, Indiana, this is a massive event. Okay, this is the one of the biggest events that we've had for a long time, and it is just so unpredictable is what's making this super, super good. Now, there's only four matches for this year, which makes this very easy to drop predictions. You have the Men's Royal Rumble, Women's Royal Rumble, the WWE Championship matchup between Cody Rhodes and Kevin Owens in a ladder match, and you also have a 2 out of 3 falls match for the WWE Tag Team Championship between DIY, Giant Gargano, and Tommaso Ciampa versus Motor City Machine Guns, Alex Shelley, and Chris Sabin. And it's just going to be such a fun, fun year. We already know 10 of the 30 women in the Rumble, and we already know 15 of the 30 men, which does make me kind of sad, but I still think we have a lot of room for some special guest entrants. So, just some quick predictions here. I mean, the 2 out of 3 falls match for the WWE Tag Team Championship, I could care less. I'm going to be honest. I'm just going to say DIY retains Giant Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa. I love them a lot more in NXT, personally. If you're going to ever want to watch some great matches, go back and watch their matches when they were enemies in NXT. Some of the best professional wrestling matches I've ever seen. The unsanctioned match, the no disqualification match. I mean, they put on some amazing, amazing matches. So easily going to go with DIY for this one. They're already the champions. But I mean, even if Motor City Machine Guns win, it's not going to do much, okay? The tag team divisions are kind of dead right now. They are in desperate need of a revival, so let's see what happens there. As for the Women's Royal Rumble match, this one's pretty interesting. I think I know who is going to win this, but here are the 10 women currently announced for it: Nia Jax, Bayley, Charlotte Flair, Naomi, Bianca Belair, Liv Morgan, Raquel Rodriguez, Lara Valkyra, Ivy Nile, and Io Sky. So Nia Jax, you know, she's had her time in the WWE. She won the championship this year. I don't think she's going to be getting this one, okay? Bayley won it last year. Her momentum's kind of in the gutter right now. Definitely not going to be going with her. You also have Ivy Nile, Lyra Valkyra, Raquel Rodriguez, Naomi. They're all fillers. I'll even say Bianca Belair. This just isn't her year. Io Sky has been gaining a lot of traction. She's a super good wrestler, but I just don't see it, you know? I see them going with Charlotte Flair. She's been out of action for over a year. It has been a long time since we had a Charlotte Flair match in the WWE, and her versus Tiffany Stratton for the WWE Women's, or the Women's, whatever it is, the WWE Women's Championship, the Women's World Championship, whichever belt it's officially called, but the top women's belt, that is the match you need at WrestleMania. Okay, that could even, I doubt it's going to main event night one of WrestleMania, but it is going to be a massive, massive event, or massive matchup, I should say, and it's either going to happen with or without Charlotte winning the Rumble. I think this is a perfect time for you to bring her back, have a new character, get the victory here, and really cement herself. So I'm going to go with Charlotte Flair. You also have Liv Morgan in this. I just think Liv Morgan is going to be feuding with someone else. You know, people are talking about Alexa Bliss returning to this, maybe if she's recovered from her injury, that could be a fun feud. People were saying Nikki Bella might return and win this. I don't know. You also have, oh my gosh, who was the former NXT Women's Champion? Oh my gosh, does it start with a P or something? I can't remember. But she might be in this one, but I'm just going to go with Charlotte Flair. It's my favorite prediction, and I hope she wins. I truly do, but, you know, it's very unpredictable, and you have no idea what's going to happen. But it should be exciting. Obviously, not as exciting as the men's, but nonetheless, still exciting. Second to last match, which I think will be the order for this. I think they're going to start. They're either going to go tag team, women's, WWE ladder match, then men's, or they're going to start with women's, go tag team, Cody Rhodes, Kevin Owens, then the men's. But for the order that I've chosen to do it in, tag team women's, then the ladder match for the Undisputed WWE Championship between Cody Rhodes and Kevin Owens, my prediction here is going to be with Cody Rhodes, okay? First off, they're doing this weird thing where, you know, Cody Rhodes has his belt, but then Kevin Owens has this winged eagle championship belt, which apparently came from, like, the WWE, like, you know, Hall of Fame or whatever. I don't know what it was for, but Kevin Owens, former friend of Cody Rhodes, snapped. He's been after him. They've been enemies, and they finally settled their feud here at the Royal Rumble, and you know, Cody Rhodes just isn't losing. okay? They view Cody Rhodes on the same level as Roman Reigns. And as of right now, the only time you're going to see Cody Rhodes drop this championship is if it's at the Royal, not even the Royal Rumble, if it's at WrestleMania or SummerSlam. And I'm thinking WrestleMania. This could be the WrestleMania he drops it at. They really might have him do the full year reign and lose it, or they might have him keep pushing past WrestleMania. We'll have to see. Because depending on who wins the Rumble, it's going to be tough to say who's going to feud with, because you got Gunther going into WrestleMania, and you got CM Punk, not CM Punk, you got Cody Rhodes going into WrestleMania as champion. And for me, we're going to talk about the Royal Rumble in a second, I really think it depends on who's facing who as for what the feuds are going to be, but there's just no chance in the world Kevin Owens wins this. If he does, it would be such a swerve, I wouldn't even know what to say. I just think this is not the guy to dethrone Cody Rhodes. We've built Cody Rhodes up to be this epic champion, and remember, this is the guy who dethroned Roman Reigns last WrestleMania. There's no way you can just have him lose just like that, but those are predictions there. So far, DIY to retain, Cody Rhodes to retain, and Charlotte Flair to win the Women's Royal Rumble. But the only reason I'll be tuning in, you know, it's going to be my boy Ryan's birthday. We're probably going to be at the bar or something. But nonetheless, I'm going to find a way to freaking watch this Royal Rumble, because it's going to be absolutely fantastic. So we already know half the field. We already know half the field, which kind of sucks. So here's the current layout. You got LA Knight, John Cena, CM Punk, Jey Uso, Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, Drew McIntyre, Rey Mysterio, Sami Zayn, Shinsuke Nakamura, Logan Paul, Penta, Chad Gable, Bron Breakker, and Carmelo Hayes. Now, out of those 15, I do think your winner's in there. I'm going to be honest. I do think your winner's in there. Now, there are so many rumored people who are going to appear in this. It's not even worth going over them all. You know, people are saying The Rock's going to appear. People are saying Joe Hendry's going to appear, which I really hope. They're saying Nick Nemeth or Dolph Ziggler will appear. They're thinking Matt Cardona, Zach, better known as Zack Ryder, will appear. There's just so many mystery, so many legends. People are saying JBL and Booker T might appear in this. There are so many potential entrants you could have. Goldberg's a name that's been thrown out there. I'm just going to leave fate up to see who we have. But as for the 15 that are currently confirmed, this is being recorded before SmackDown, so I don't know anyone else who will declare for the Rumble before this upcoming Friday. But you have Carmelo Hayes here, who a lot of people are thinking they're going to give a lot of time, what do you want to call it, showtime, airtime, if you will, ring time, I think is the best word to use here, a lot of ring time to really showcase his abilities here. The people are saying he's going to be the one person to go an hour. They usually have one or two people go an hour in the Royal Rumble to really showcase their skills. People are saying it's going to be him. Obviously, he's not going to win it, but down the road, he could definitely be a title winner, champion, future champion. Bron Breakker, look, he's an Intercontinental champion. He is going to be a WWE champion. He's going to be a World Heavyweight champion. I just think they're still building him up. They're building him up. They're giving him time. Think about it. They've done the exact same things with John Cena, Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, The Rock, Triple H. It is rare you are just thrown into the title category. Bron Breakker is going to have probably some good moments in the Rumble. Heck, you might even have him versus Goldberg in a standoff or something, but I don't think he's going to win. Chad Gable, man, give Chad Gable a singles championship. Give him the Intercontinental Championship. Give him the United States Championship. He's not winning the Rumble, but he really deserves to get a championship. Penta, man, Penta is just taking over. He's the next luchador in the WWE that's taking over. Like we mentioned, Rey Mysterio's in here. I think they're going to have a moment in the Rumble, and I think they're setting those two up for a WrestleMania match. I'm excited to see what he's going to do. Obviously not going to win. Logan Paul, they might give the WWE Championship at one point. He's going to have some fantastic moments in the Rumble. He gets a lot of name exposure. I mean, people are saying Kai Cenat and Speed are going to appear in this. They're going to do so many goofy things, but he's obviously not going to win. Shinsuke Nakamura, your current men's United States champion, he's going to be losing the belt in the next few months. He's not winning the Rumble. Won it in 2018, but his stock, it isn't low, but it's just his aura, if you really want to use that word, as cringy as it may sound. His aura is a perfect word to describe. It's just not all there. Sami Zayn also going to be in the Rumble, another guy who he's had his moments in the past. He's kind of just a filler character now. We also have Jey Uso. I'm sure he'll get a lot of pops, but he's not going to be making an impact. You also have LA Knight, yet again, going to get a pop, not going to do much. Let's get into the top four. The top five, I should better say. Here are the top five options for who could win the Royal Rumble. First off, at number five, I'm going to say Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre has just suffered so many blows. They keep having him lose. I think he's overdue for a win. He really is. Now, if he wins, here's the issue. You either have a Gunther matchup or a Cody Rhodes matchup. And I just think the WrestleMania match for him is not that. I think it's Roman Reigns. And I honestly think him versus Drew McIntyre is the matchup to make. You could even have him rematch Seth freaking Rollins. Okay, there's a lot of options to do Drew McIntyre, but it does not appear this is his year. But he is someone people are saying is going to finish in the final five, final four, and I'm most definitely with them. But as far as winning, he's probably going to come in at the number five spot for people who we think could actually win it. But when we look past actually winning the Rumble, I mean, mind you, here's a guy that won the Money in the Bank this past year, cashed in on the same night, and his cashing got messed up by CM Punk. So I don't expect too much, but I will be rooting for Drew McIntyre to have a good performance in this year's Rumble. And number four, I'm going to say Seth Rollins. Here's the thing. Seth Rollins will always be someone who it is believable for him to win a championship, believable for him to win Money in the Bank, Royal Rumble, whatever you want to call it. It's just, it doesn't work this year. It doesn't work, you know. People are saying him and CM Punk might have another WrestleMania match. They already had a match on Raw. I think people are trying to work in where he's going to fit into this feud because there's just, you know, all the names we're listing right now, they're all going to intertwine together. So I don't really think that Seth Rollins is going to win this year, but if he does, you know, I mean, keep it on your radar because you never know. You never really know. And number three, Roman Reigns. Look, this is one of the odd that we reached a point now in Roman Reigns' career where we actually wouldn't mind him winning the Royal Rumble. But here's the thing. Winning the Royal Rumble, you know, this was brought up during Money in the Bank. Obviously, they failed Money in the Bank. But when you win the Rumble, it has to do something for you. It really does. And right now, when we talk about the two people that are ahead of Roman Reigns on my list of who I think is going to win the Royal Rumble, I just don't think this is going to do it for Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns doesn't need to win the Royal Rumble to even main event WrestleMania. Okay, and I think Roman Reigns is not going to be in the title picture. You know, I doubt they're going to do The Rock now. I feel like if they were going to do Rock versus Roman, they would have already started building it up. Maybe that buildup starts here at the Royal Rumble. That would be insane. But I think Roman Reigns versus Drew McIntyre would be a fantastic matchup to have on WrestleMania. I think even Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins would be an insane matchup. There's a feud red hot right there. You even have talk of Roman Reigns, CM Punk. It's going to be interesting, but I just don't think Roman Reigns is winning this year. My number two spot is John Cena. Actually, here's the issue. Okay, here's my issue. John Cena and CM Punk, I think, are everyone's top two favorites. They're everyone's top two favorites. And I think it's going to come down to whoever doesn't win this is going to win an Elimination Chamber match to fight for a championship. I just want to say that right now. So if it's John Cena who wins the Rumble, I think he challenges Gunther. I just think that's what he does because Gunther versus John Cena works. John Cena versus Cody Rhodes just doesn't work. Okay, I would love to see John Cena hoisting up that belt, but it just makes more sense realistically for John Cena to beat Gunther at WrestleMania. There's also the possibility John Cena loses here, doesn't even fight for a world championship here. He fights Randy Orton at WrestleMania. He fights, heck, even Roman Reigns. He fights Drew McIntyre. A lot of options, but I really do hope it's John Cena, and I really hope they have him be in the final two. Because it would be really nice to at least give us the possibility that he's going to win. But I think the favorite, and I think it's what everyone's clamoring for, if you're not going to give us John Cena, you have to give us CM Punk. And the thing with CM Punk is the last time that he was in the Royal Rumble back in, he was in last year's, but what we're all really thinking of is 2014, where he was screwed and he left the company. Okay, and I think this is a redemption. Over 10 years later, his return, and this is where he really shows out. He was the runner-up last year, and I think this would be a great opportunity to give him the win. It would do wonders for him. He's never won a Royal Rumble. And I think, honestly, CM Punk has reached a point where he could main event WrestleMania. He could win a championship at WrestleMania. CM Punk can have feuds with Cody Rhodes, and it will work. He can have feuds with Seth Rollins. He can have feuds with Roman Reigns. It's all just going to come down to what the booking is, and it's just so unpredictable. Because you have all these different matchups, you know, is CM Punk going to feud with Roman Reigns? Is he going to feud with Cody Rhodes? Is he going to feud with Seth Rollins? Is John Cena going to feud with Roman Reigns? Is John Cena going to feud with Gunther or whatever? So it's really going to be tough. It's so unpredictable. It really, truly is so unpredictable. I think that's what makes the Royal Rumble so special. And it's really going to need to get back to that. Because 2020, we can go on a little run here, but you know, basically for the longest time, the Royal Rumble was fantastic. The Royal Rumble was the stuff. Every Royal Rumble was good. Then 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, 2016, you went through a really rough patch. 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020, you're getting back to it. 2021 doesn't really count with COVID, but then 2022, 2023, 2024, we've been lacking in surprise appearances. It's almost like when we get down to the final two, it's never the person we want to win. So I think this is finally, we're getting back to our roots of Royal Rumbles, and it's going to make up for the lackluster ones we've had. But my official pick, I'm going to go with CM Punk. I think his time is overdue, and honestly, he deserves to win, and it would make a lot of sense if he did win. So those are your Royal Rumble predictions, your Royal Rumble thoughts, and I'm excited to see what the WWE delivers to us. But also, we were delivered something else, not from the WWE, but from the NFL. As we know, our two teams in the Super Bowl. This won't take but a minute as we look at the first matchup here. Eagles beat Commanders. Eagles are back in the Super Bowl. Eagles back in the Super Bowl. I mean, they dominated 55-23. I mean, they scored three touchdowns in the fourth quarter unanswered against the Commanders. This was one of the biggest beatdowns I've ever seen. This was truly, truly just domination. So we'll start with the Commanders. First off, shout out Jayden Daniels, 255 yards through the air, touchdown and a pick. Also rushed for 48 yards and touchdown. Talk about just running through Rookie of the Year. Just easily winning Rookie of the Year. Just great work from him this year. Brian Thomas Jr., 36 yards. Austin Eckler, 15 yards. Held in check. Through the passing game, I mean, Olamide Chase, he had 4 catches, 26 yards. Scary Terry, 3 catches, 51 yards, a touchdown. Zach Ertz, 11 catches, 104 yards. He had a fantastic game. 3 catches, 42 yards for Dammy Brown. Austin Eckler, 5 catches, only 17 yards. So they did the best they could, but this was the peak of the Eagles' performance all year. I mean, the Commanders had played them close both times before, but this was the Eagles putting together every single effort, every single bit of grind they could, and they pulled it out here to get the win. So Eagles deserve to do it. I mean, 14-3, they won their division, number 2 seed, and they have just been fantastic, been playing some great football. 14-3 on the year, and they're heading to the Super Bowl. Good for the Eagles. That's all I really got to say. You just got to give them their props. I didn't really care. I didn't really care if it was the Commanders. I didn't care if it was the Eagles. There was just one team I didn't want in the Super Bowl, and unfortunately, it is the Eagles' current opponent, which is the Chiefs. That's right. The Chiefs win 32-29 against the Bills. I mean, you know, the kryptonite to Patrick Mahomes is Josh Allen, but also, you know, Superman usually gets the best of kryptonite whenever it's thrown at him. So Chiefs survive another close one against the Bills. Just, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. I honestly can't believe it. Just so much went down in this game. And I mean, close from the get-go, it starts 7-3 Chiefs, then it's 10-7 Bills, then it's 14-10, then it's 21-10 at halftime, and you're like, oh my gosh, this is going to be bad. And then with a minute 32 seconds left, the Bills convert, and then they go for two, and they fail. So it's 21-16 heading into halftime. First drive, it's a 7.5-minute drive. James Cook touchdown. It's 22-21. Bills are up. Patrick Mahomes rushes for 10 yards, 29-22. Then you get a touchdown from the Bills. It's 29-29. And then with 2 minutes and 42 seconds left, the Chiefs kick a 35-yard field goal to take the lead. And then the Bills begin a game-winning drive, which is unfortunately cut short when Dalton Kincaid drops a potential game-advancing pass. It was unfortunate. Obviously, it wasn't an easy catch, but mind you, it was dropped nonetheless. And the Bills will not be going to the Super Bowl. And the Chiefs will go for their third straight year looking to three-peat. And honestly, it might be 4 straight years. I've lost count at this point. It's gotten ridiculous. But Chiefs win. You know, no words, man. Just heartbreaking. I still think Josh Allen's your MVP. I think you got to give it to him. But I mean, come on, the Chiefs again. I'm just sick of it. I can't believe I'm going to be rooting for the Eagles harder than ever when they play. I truly am. Box score, Bills, Josh Allen, 237 yards, 2 touchdowns through the air, 39 yards on the ground. He gave his all. And Josh Allen played a damn good game, but he had to play with some really sus play from the refs. Obviously, the magic of the Chiefs and just some unfortunate actions of his other teammates. Ray Davis had 2 carries for 4 yards. James Cook, 85 yards on the ground and 2 touchdowns. He was phenomenal. Ty Johnson got 19 yards on 6 carries. James Cook had a really good game. Okay, only touched the ball 13 times. You get 85 yards and 2 touchdowns. That's pretty dang good. Receiving-wise, Matt Collins, 3 catches, 73 yards, and a touchdown. That barefoot menace was looking great. Curtis Samuel had 1 catch the whole game. It was a 4-yard touchdown. Can't hate on him. Keon Coleman held the 1 catch for 12 yards. Amari Cooper, 4 catches, 33 yards. Dawson Knox, 1 catch for 7 yards. James Cook, 3 catches, 49 yards. Khalil Shakir, 6 catches, 46 yards. And I gotta say, Kincaid is just putting up the numbers, man. Putting up the numbers here. He, unfortunately, is the one to blame. But similar to Mark Andrews, you know, even though they dropped that pass, there's still a lot more that goes into it. So Really unfortunate that the Bills will not be going to the Super Bowl. It's going to be the Chiefs again at this point. I just think it's going to be the Chiefs every single freaking year. But how about shout out to the Chiefs? They broke 30 again. What'd they break 30 for the second time this year? I mean, long overdue. Long overdue. So you're going to get a Kansas City rematch against Philadelphia in the Super Bowl now. Will I be tuning in? I might. I might tune in. But at the same time, I could care less. I could care less who wins this. It is just so brutal. It's so brutal every year. Tuning in, it's the Chiefs here, it's the Chiefs there. My Vikings got eliminated. Then I was like, oh, the Lions will make it out. Maybe, you know, maybe the Commanders will make it. And we get the Eagles. Now, I am a Saquon Barkley and Jalen Hurts fan. I also don't mind A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. But it's just the Eagles in general. You know, it's just not a team a Vikings fan really roots for. It's complicated, to say the least, our relationship with Philadelphia. So we'll see what happens. We'll obviously do a little Super Bowl prediction next week, sub point, probably for our UFC 312 show when we do our predictions for that. We'll drop our Super Bowl prediction. But, hey, I'd have gone 1-1 on picks. I knew the Eagles would win, and I was just rooting for the Bills. And sadly, they couldn't get it done. But, hey. That's just how it goes. And I'm hoping that my predictions do go well this upcoming Saturday when we get all of our matchups at UFC Saudi Arabia. This is a fun card, guys. I just want to let you know we got some hidden gems on the main card. We got some hidden gems on the prelims. And the top three fights for this event are just absolutely fantastic. So let's go through every fight, drop our predictions, and give our thoughts on who we think is going to be victorious come Sunday morning. So to start out, the one thing I do want to say is my favorite thing about this card is it absolutely builds on itself. It goes from some typical fights you would see on the prelim to, I'd say, the final three or four fights on this card are really UFC Saudi Arabian potential. What word am I thinking of? They're really UFC Saudi Arabian. When you think of these big Saudi Arabian cards, you got all these billionaires coming to this. These are the fights I think about. These are the fights I want to see on glorified fight nights. And we kick things off with a bang, heavyweight division, as Hamdi Abdulhabab. Oh my gosh, Abdulhabab. I'm so sorry, Hamdi. I don't know. His nickname's the Hammer. Takes on Jamal Pogues, kicking us off. A little heavyweight action. -110. Oddsmakers got these two neck and neck. Hamdi 5-0 with one no contest. Jamal Pogues 11-4. 6'3" to 6'2" gives Jamal 1 inch in height. He has a notable 5 inches in reach, 77 inches to 72. Orthodox with that right hand for Jamal. Southpaw with that left for Hamdi Abdelwahab. Abdelwahab? I think I've got down Abdelwahab. I'm so sorry, Hamdi. I really am. Truly, Hamdi, if you're ever going to listen to this one day, I clearly don't know how to say your last name. So Hamdi, we'll kick it off with him, 32 years old, from Egypt, but actually now lives and trains in New York. Of those 5 wins, he's gotten 5 knockouts. Last time he was in the UFC was in 2022, where he had an overturned decision win over Dontell Mays due to popping for an undisclosed substance. Hamdi since then competed in a grappling match in August and was submitted in round number 1. So Hamdi, you know, 32 years old, 6'2", he's weighing 265 pounds. He's a chunky monkey, let me just tell you that. I don't really know what to expect from him. If we're gonna consider anyone the hometown boy in this matchup, it would be Hamdi, but it's gonna be pretty 50-50 if you ask me. Jamal, 29 years old from California, has 4 knockouts and 1 submission in his 11 career wins. Of his 4 losses, he's been finished 3 times. But so far in the UFC, he actually fought on Dana White's Contender Series twice, winning a decision on both of those. Made his UFC debut in February of 2023, getting a grappling decision win over Josh Parshian. He would lose his first professional fight in the UFC to Mick Parkin, but let's not knock that, because Mick Parkin is probably the most potentialed heavyweight right now that's outside of the top 10. I mean, because when we think of potential, like, heavyweight goats, I mean, you got Tom Aspinall, Ciryl Gane, Sergey Pavlovich, Halton Almeida, you got all these guys. Mick Parkin, very underrated on the come up, and he's ranked number 15, so that's not too bad of a loss to have. Jamal had one fight in 2024, it was February 3rd, where he beat Thomas Peterson in a unanimous decision. Look, Jamal hasn't been flashy, hasn't been doing overly a lot. I mean, he won a contract where he got outstruck on the Dana White's Contender Series. And as for Hamdi, you know, it wasn't necessarily an awful performance against Dontell Mays, But at the same time, it was very sloppy. He kind of gassed in it, and it just kind of spoke to how bad Dontell Mays is. This is going to be 50-50 for me, but when it comes down to it, I've seen much more from Jamal Pogues. He's been much more active. Despite not fighting in a full year, he's been more active in MMA than Hamdi. So we are going to go with Jamal Pogues by unanimous decision. This is a toss-up. Like I said, odds makers at minus 110 each. We'll see who gets it done, but we're going to ride with Jamal Pogues. We'll see how he does. Following that, featherweight action as Bogdan the Unleashed Grodd takes on Lucas the Lion Alexander. Bogdan Grodd minus 125, Lucas plus 105. So the oddsmakers have this one equally as close. Bogdan is 14-2 professionally, Lucas is 8-4. 5'11 to 5'8 gives Lucas the Lion 3 inches in height, and he also has 3 inches in reach, 73 to 70. Both men stand and fight in the orthodox fighting position. Good stuff from them. Let's kick it off with Bogdan Grodd. Bogdan, the favorite in this one, 29 years old from Romania, but now lives and trains in Austria. Currently on a 3-fight winning streak. He's got 11 finishes of those 14 wins, 8 knockouts, 3 subs. Fought on Dana White's Contender Series in August of 2023, where he was knocked out in round 1 by Tom Nolan. Pretty embarrassing. Comes back August of 2024, looked improved, had a crazy fight against Michael Aswell. Some are calling it one of the greatest fights in Dana White's Contender Series history. Won it there, and now he's going to get a shot in the UFC. So Bogdan, he feels more like the hometown favorite for this one. You know, Saudi Arabia, it's kind of in a weird mix of the world, but Bogdan Grodd definitely going to have some more fans here, I think, than Lucas Alexander, the 29-year-old as well. Wow, a lot of 29-year-olds. Wow, 3 in a row here to kick off the card. From Brazil, he's got 3 knockouts of his 8 career wins, and of his 4 losses, he's been finished in all of them, submitted in 3 of them. So Lucas, it's it's been tough going. Tough going. Debuted in 2022, has to take on Joy Anderson Brito. Obviously, manhandles him. Then in March of 2023, retires Stephen Pearson. Looks dominant against him, but mind you, Stephen Pearson, age veteran, he was on the way out. Fought in November of 2023, taking on a guy in Jekka Sergei, where he's outstriking him through the first minute and 31 seconds, and Jekka literally lands one punch and drops him. So Lucas, his chin isn't all there. His grappling abilities aren't really all there. Look, I don't know what Lucas Alexander has to bring to the table, but from what I saw of Bogdan Grodd on Dana White's Contender Series, I think he has got this one in the bag. He's coming off a little win streak. He's coming off a tough competitive fight. He finishes more of his fights. I mean, 11 of 14 wins compared to 3 out of 8 wins. You already know that I'm going to be backing Bogdan Grodd in this one. And I really sense a finish. I really do. It's just hard to place in what regard. So I will say Bogdan Grodd gets this one done by knockout. I'm going to say Bogdan Grodd gets this one done by knockout, but it's going to be really tricky to place if it's a knockout, if it's a submission. We'll have to see. But Bogdan Grodd over Lucas Alexander is my prediction. After that, we get into our lone woman's fight on this card. I love it. Breaking some boundaries here in the world of mixed martial arts. And this one's in the women's flyweight division. As the number 12-ranked Jasmine Jasu Divisions welcomes the number 7th-ranked women's bantamweight, Myra Bueno Silva, back to the division. Jasmine, 12-3 professionally. Myra Shitara Bueno Silva is 10-4 with 1 draw and 1 no contest. 5'7 to 5'6 does give Jasmine the 1 inch height advantage, and she also has a 68 to 66 inch reach advantage. Orthodox stance for both of these ladies. I like it. You know what? This is going to be a very even, very competitive matchup. It's just so random. It's really random, and we'll start with Jasmine real quick to let you just know how random this is, as she's coming in on a 3-fight winning streak, looking absolutely dominant at women's flyweight. I mean, the 35-year-old is from Canada, 5 finishes in those 12 wins, and on this win streak, she's gotten 2 round 3 submissions. Both of those performance of the nights, she has been amazing. Jasmine, 5 finishes, like I said, total career, never been finished in her 3 professional losses. And let me remind you, the last 2 women she's lost to, September 2023, Tracy Cortez, June 2022, Natalia Silva. So those women right there are the number 5 and number 11 women in the flyweight division. It's been pretty good so far for Jasmine in the UFC. I believe she is 6-2. also has a win on Dana White's Contender Series. On this win streak, I mean, the Priscilla Castro win in January of last year, one of the most dominant performances I've seen, follows that up with an oddly competitive matchup with Fatima Klein in July that was on short notice, and then women handled, I should say, Ariana De Silva in November, just ran through her, submitted her. It was fantastic. Jasmine coming to her prime at 35 years old. It's very impressive. It really is. She does it in the grappling realm, but we've also seen a little knockout power from her too. I mean, she dropped Priscilla Castro. Very impressive. It's going to be tricky. It's going to be tricky to get the finish over Maya Bonilla Silva because she's not easy to be finished. But nonetheless, I am probably going to back Jasmine in this one. Maya Bonilla Silva, her opponent, moving down from women's bantamweight, 33 years old, from Brazil. She is the plus 185 underdog, with Jasmine being the minus 225 favorite. 8 finishes with 1 knockout and 7 subs of her 10 professional victories. Of her 4 losses, she's only been finished once. That was actually the last time she fought in June, which was stopped due to a cut on her head from Macy Chisome. Before that, she'd of course lost to Raquel Penton in one of the worst one of the worst title fights that I have ever been privileged to watch. It was excruciating. Okay, it was really bad to watch. And it just sucks, because at one point, she was on a 4-fight win streak with 3 submissions in a row, had finished Holly Holmes, that was overruled to a no contest, but we knew how good she was. She started off her career in the women's flyweight division. I mean, she picked up wins over Jillian Robertson, Mauro Romero Borella, Lena Landsberg, Wu Yan, also lost to Marina Morose in a fight of the night. Manon Fiorot had a draw against Montana De La Rosa. So I'm curious if these just 2 losses, mind you, these losses are to the number 1 and number 5 women in the women's bantamweight division, so it's not like she lost a bad competition, but I wonder if mentally that is what really took her away from wanting to fight in the women's bantamweight division anymore. Unfortunately for Maya Bonilla Silva, I think she is at the caliber to beat Jasmine Jasu Davicius. But on this night in Saudi Arabia, look, Jasmine has been on the run of a lifetime, and she has gotten better with each performance. She's dealt with adversity. And, you know, if she's going to lose this one, this will be a fight she loses in the UFC. I mean, we mentioned she's only lost to top 10 competition. We're going to back Jasmine Jasu Davicius nonetheless. Because Myra, we've seen her. She seems like she's a round one in maybe the first minute or two of round number 2. I mean, she has 0 gas tank, and the fact she's going to be cutting weight, she's not even going to be fighting at a natural weight, it's a bit concerning. We're going to back Jasmine Jasu Davicius. After that, we head to the men's lightweight division. This card is actually kind of fluctuating around with the bout order, but as of right now, lightweight action is scheduled to be next. Terrence T-Rex McKinney takes on Demir the Bosnian Bomber Hadzovic. Terrence coming into this one the minus 350 favorite. Demir's the plus 275 underdog. Terrence 15-7. Demir 14-7. Pretty even if you ask me. 5'10 to 5'9. Terrence has got an inch in height. He also has a notable 3 inches in reach. 73-70. Switch stance for Terrence. He likes to throw with both hands. Orthodox with the right for Demir Hadzovic. Terrence McKinney, one of the most exciting fighters on the roster. I mean, he's up there with Michael Chandler. Let me just tell you. Terrence McKinney, let's kick it off. 30 years old from Florida. 15 finishes and 15 career wins, 7 knockouts, 8 subs, 7 career losses, 7 times he's been finished, 5 by knockout, 2 by sub. That is right, 22 career wins, and he's never even seen a third round, ever, okay? 22 career fights, I should say, not wins, unfortunately. But Terrence is action-packed as they come. I mean, makes his debut on Dana White's Contender Series. Sean Woodson hits him with a fantastic fly knee. He debuts 7-second knockout of Matt Frivola, then submits Fares Zayem. It was insane. Then takes on Drew Dober, one of the most entertaining 3 minutes and 17 seconds I've ever seen. It looked like he was going to knock Drew Dober out cold. Drew Dober reverses it and finishes him. Follows that up August 2022, round 1 submission. Then Ishmael's Bonfim knockout of him in January 2023, one of the best knockouts of the year. Gets face planted, unfortunate to see. Then, July 2023, dominates Nazim Sadikov in round number 1, 10-8, some almost finishes him multiple times, gets reversed and submitted a minute into round number 2. Super, super goofy. 2023 was a good year, though, as he ended it with a minute and 25-second knockout of the debuting Mike Breeden and a 20-second knee knockout of Brendan Morote. 2024, not as kind. He had one fight in May, and he was hit with one of the craziest head kick knockouts I've seen from Esteban Rivovic. I'm talking connected clean on the skull, and he was out cold. Look, Terrence, he obviously doesn't have the best record, 15-7 in the UFC. He's sitting at a very mediocre 5-4, but mind you, he is so entertaining. This is going to be fun, and I'm pretty sure we're going to be picking him to win by a finish. Demir Adzovic, his opponent, 38 years old, hasn't fought in 2 freaking years. The 38-year-old is from Denmark, but now lives and trains in Bosnia. 10 finishes in his 14 career wins, 7 by knockout, 3 by sub. Of his 7 losses, he's only ever been finished twice. He was actually supposed to fight Balaji Oki February 10th of 2024, but that fight fell apart as Demir got injured. Demir was fighting in the UFC from 2016 to 2022. You know, he had, I mean, a win over Yancy Medeiros in 2021. He got submitted by Renato Moicano in 2020. It's been pretty mediocre. Last time he fought, July 2022, got grappled to death by Mark Diakise, 13 minutes, 35 seconds of control time for Mark on 8 takedowns. And mind you, 8 of 11, 72% from Mark Diakise. So Demir, been a while since he's last fought. I bet he's going to be a bit jittery, if you will. And I don't know if it's going to be knockout or sub. I'm going to say knockout. I'm going to say Terrence goes over and blitzes him right off the bat. But as we know, Terrence has got to be careful he doesn't get caught. But this is one of my more favorite picks. This is going to be an action-packed fight. And especially 8 years as senior, coming off of 2 hiatus, Terrence McKinney is going to want to pounce on Demir Adzovic. So easily going to be picking Terrence McKinney. Following that, we're back to heavyweight action. And oh my gosh, this is just the definition of two out-of-shape guys going at it as we get Shamil Gaziev and Thomas the Train Peterson. Shamil, the minus 400 favorite. Thomas Peterson, plus 300 underdog. Shamil is 13-1. Thomas is 9-2. 6'4 to 6'1. Wow, Shamil's 6'4? I didn't realize that. 3 inches in height to Shamil. He also has 4 inches in reach, 78 to 74. Orthodox with the right for Shamil. Southpaw with the left for Thomas the Train Peterson. What a goofy nickname. Shamil, look, we all thought Shamil was going to be the big deal. Okay, we all thought he was the next big thing in 2024. Turned out he wasn't. Turned out he wasn't ready for some high-level competition. The 34-year-old is from Baran, also from Russia, but lives in Baran now. 11 finishes of those 13 wins, including 8 knockouts and 3 subs. Debut on Dana's Contender Series, round 1 submission. Then debuts against Martin Boudet, dominates him, outstrikes him 49-8 significantly with a round 2 TKO, and he was poised for a big 2024. He gets his first main event in March, and I don't even know what to describe the Jarzynho-Rozenstruik fight. It was literally Jarzynho treated him like a punching bag after losing round 1, and Shamil just kind of wouldn't go down. It was very abysmal, very boring. He would return in August and pick up a run-of-the-mill decision over Don Telmes. I mean, it was just looking like he wanted to get back in the win category. Shamil has lost all of his aura, as we mentioned before. Something with the aura, it's just completely off. His opponent, Thomas Peterson, 29 years old, from Minnesota. I think he was born in Farmington, now is from Webster. I mean, you know, Minnesota boys, we gotta root for them. 8 finishes of 9 wins, 2, 8 knockouts, and 1, actually 7 knockouts, and 1 submission. Thomas picked up his first decision win with a win over Muhammad Usman in July of 2024. Good win there, used his grappling. And before that, we had mentioned he had lost to Jamal Pogues in February. So Thomas, he's okay. He's okay. You know, he hasn't really shown anything of specialty, I'll say. And in terms of higher level competition, he has fought nowhere near the level of Shamil Gaziev. I think Shamil gets back into the win category here. I think he does it in typical Shamil fashion, gets himself another knockout, or back in Shamil. And, you know, it's kind of a win-win for me, because if Thomas wins, I get to be happy a Minnesota boy won. But if Shamil wins, then my prediction's correct. So we're going to go with Shamil, and I'm just going to personally say it. I do think he is going to win this one. I mean, I'm sorry, Thomas. I have not seen enough personally from the few UFC appearances you've had. And mind you, it's not saying a lot about Shamil Gaziev, because he hasn't been necessarily the most impressive either. Moving on to our final prelim, I want to say, I think they're going to go, actually, I don't know if they're going with a 6-fight main card or five. I believe it's going to be five, which would make sense. So I think this is either going to be the first fight in the main card or the final prelim. My prediction is final prelim. We'll have to see what the bout order is by the time Saturday morning rolls around. Muhammad Naimov, Hillman is his nickname, takes on Khan Genghis, hopefully. Genghis Khan. I like that nickname. How creative. Muhammad Naimov coming in this one is the -260 favorite. Khan is the +210 underdog. Muhammad 11-3. Khan 12-3-1. Well, I was about to say 12-13. 5'9" to 5'7". Muhammad has a 2-inch height advantage and a 4-inch reach advantage. Ooh, very nice for Naimov. 78-66. Both men are in the orthodox fighting position. Originally, which was supposed to be on the main card, it has since been booted to the prelims, or however you want to put it. We'll have to see. Muhammad Naimov, 30 years old from Tajikistan, but now trains in Colorado. He trains with Corey Sandhagen, Curtis Blades at Elevation. Good gym out there. Muhammad, 5 knockouts and 3 subs in his 11 career wins, and he's never been finished except for his last fight when he got submitted by Felipe Lima in June of 2024. So he had previously been on a good run. You know, he was on like a 7-fight win streak, 3-0 in the UFC, and unfortunately ran into some tougher competition. It's, you know, Naimov isn't anything to write home about. He's actually won some pretty weird decisions over Nathaniel Wood, but it's he's okay. He's okay. I don't know. You never know what fighter you're going to get. Am I going to get the fighter who gets submitted, or am I going to get the fighter who's getting a round 2 knockout and looks absolutely fantastic? You never know what you're going to get. The opponent, Khan Ofley, you know, it's not much. Genghis hasn't given us much to work with. The underdog, 31 years old, from Australia. Hail him from down under. Shame he can't fight next weekend in Australia. That's unfortunate. 7 finishes in his 12 career wins, 2 knockouts, and 5 subs. He's been finished once, and it was in his last fight against Myron Santos. And Khan, he'd been coming in with a lot of momentum. He looked pretty good on this past season of The Ultimate Fighter. And then Myron Santos just hit him with the cleanest straight punch I've ever seen. Oh my gosh, just took his jaw for a walk. Just absolutely eliminated him. It was some sight to behold, let me tell you. And it's just interesting, okay, because I have both of these guys. They're both equally good in the featherweight division, both not as experienced. Muhammad Naimov has more UFC experience, but I don't know what Khan Ofley we're going to get, okay, because he looks so good on the, what is it called, The Ultimate Fighter, gets the UFC, gets caught with just a beautiful punch. For Naimov, he had some awkward UFC wins here and there, and then Felipe Lima was able to get the better of him in round number 3. Now, mind you, he had been pretty competitive up to that point. Looking at where they are in the world, you know, I got someone in Khan who's from Tajikistan, that's close to Saudi Arabia, Australia. For Khan, not as much of a hometown crowd. I think we're going to go to a decision, and I'm going to think Naimov gets it. It could be a sketchy decision. It could be a good decision. But we are going to back Naimov in this one. Muhammad Naimov by decision. That's going to be our prediction. Nothing personal, Genghis Khan. You have an amazing nickname. But if you win this one, I will heavily consider you picking you next time. I just don't know anything about you. I'm sorry, my man. I don't know a damn thing about you. With that, we get into the top 5 best fights on the card, and they are literally in order of this fight's better than this one, this fight's better than this one, this fight's better than this one. This is a fantastic main card if it does end up being a 5-fight main card. Kicking us off, lightweight division, it just doesn't get much more closer than this. Fares, Smile Killer Ziam takes on Mike Beast Boy Davis. This is one of the most underrated fights of the evening. These are two names the regulars aren't going to know, but the casuals, actually, no, these are the names the casuals aren't going to know, but us regulars, us experts, we know these names. Fares, I am 16-4. Mike Davis 11-2. 6'1" to 6'0". Fares 1 inch in height, 75-72 in reach, 3 inches for Fares, I am. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. Fares at +120 is the underdog. Mike Davis at -140 is the favorite. But like I said, these odds have been flip flopping all week. Fares, I am currently in his prime right now. 27 years young from France, currently on that little 4-fight win streak of his. 10 finishes and 16 wins, make it 5 knockouts, 5 subs. And of his 4 losses, he's been submitted 3 times, which I think is very notable when we're talking about his career. Debuted against Don Mage, PFL legend right there, and unfortunately lost. After that, picked up 2 wins over Jamie Malarkey and Luigi Vendramini. Luigi is probably best known for the man that Paddy Pimblett knocked out in his UFC debut. Last time he lost, we had mentioned it, Terrence McKinney submitted him in round number 1. That was in February of 2022. Since then, he's been good. You know, picked up a 2022 decision win over Michael Figlock, 2023 decision over Jai Herbert, then 2024 win over Claudio Puelles, and the biggest win of his career, a nasty knee knockout of Matt Frivola in front of his hometown of Paris. Best performance and the biggest fight of his career. Fairzayam looking absolutely fantastic. He showed the grappling in that. He showed he was able to survive submissions, eat big hits. He looked phenomenal, and I'm excited to see what he brings to this contest. Now, his opponent, Mike Davis, I mean, he is no easy cat to control, let me tell you. 32 years old from Florida, also on a 4-fight win streak. 9 finishes and 11 wins, 7 knockouts and 2 subs. Of his 2 losses, he's been submitted once. Now, mind you, his UFC losses are to Sodiq Youssef on the Contender Series and Gilbert Burns when Gilbert Burns fought at lightweight. So, Mike Davis, since losing to Gilbert Burns, getting submitted in 2019, picked up a round 3 knockout in 2019, a fight of the night win in 2021, a decision win in 2022 on my birthday, October 1st, 2022, and then in March returned and submitted Nathan Levy in round number 2 with an arm triangle. Now, Mike Davis, just, it's tricky. It's tricky what to say about him, okay, because we can hardly look at 2021 anymore. Okay, I can maybe look at 2022. We're in 2025. We can only go so many years back to point out where a guy's at in his career. So we can really look at 2024. When he took on Nathan Levy, it was, you know, in round 1, he got taken down, but he reversed it and was able to end up in control. Round 2, similar scenario, basically just got him to the ground. I mean, he didn't even land a takedown, just brought it to the ground, got an arm triangle in. So if it's going to be on the ground, I'm going to give this one to Mike Davis. But what I've seen from Fairzayam, by the way, way more active. In the time that Mike Davis has had 2 fights, Fairzayam has been on his 4-fight winning streak. And coming off of that high of Matt Frivola, people are thinking very highly of Fairzayam. And I think he's going to continue it into this one. I do think this will be fairly competitive. I can see this going the distance, but I am going to back the 27-year-old Fairzayam. He's only 5 years older than me, okay? And he's on the way to getting himself a ranked opponent. I mean, I think if he beats Mike Davis, depending on Grant Dawson, Joel Alvarez, Benoit Saint-Denis, Jalen Turner, one of those guys are going to be suffering a loss. I think if Fairzayam wins, he's getting one of those names next up for sure. Should be an exciting fight. Good way to kick off the main card. After that, bantamweight action. Last time we're in the 135 for this card as Saeed Nurmagomedov, no relation to Khabib, takes on Vinicius Lockdog Oliveira. This is going to... I just can't pick this fight. Okay, this fight is just so freaking close. I mean, right now, Saeed minus 185, Vinicius plus 150. Don't be persuaded. This is about as even as it gets. Saeed, 18-3. The Lock Dog, Oliveira, 21-3. 5'9 to 5'8 gives Vincius 1 inch in height. Both men have a 70 inch reach. Switch stance for Vincius and an orthodox stance for Saeed Nurmagomedov. Let's start with the Russian boy. Saeed Nurmagomedov, 32 years old, 4 knockouts and 6 subs make up his 18 career victories. And of his 3 losses, he's never been finished. He actually had 3 canceled bouts in 2024. No one really too high level, but nonetheless, he hasn't fought since October of 2023, where he had a 1-13-second knockout of Muin Gafurov, which was very impressive. I'll say both of his losses in the UFC to Ryony Barcelos and to Jonathan Martinez, I didn't think he lost them. I think a majority of people were like acknowledged they were close fights, but that he should have gotten the decision. Nonetheless, Saeed coming into this one off a whim. He's gotten finishes over Saeed Aguk Karakhanov. Sorry, I probably butchered that name. A 47-second knockout of Cody Stammen. A 51-second knockout of Mark Streeck. He's pretty talented. He's a pretty talented guy. He hunts for the finish, which is really great to see. He leans on the grappling. Okay, he's obviously a grappler, but we've seen the striking. The Douglas Silva de Andrade fight, the Mark Striegel fight, even the Jonathan Martinez fight he was using as a striking. So it just depends what Saeed is going to show up. And I think the one disadvantage is he hasn't fought in a year and 4 months. So it has been a while since you've seen Saeed Nurmagomedov in an MMA ring. His opponent, Vinicius Oliveira, I mean, this is his shot. This is his chance to break out. The 29-year-old is from Brazil. Currently on a 4-fight winning streak. He was a champion in whatever promotion he was in down in Brazil. Of his 21 wins, 16 knockouts, 2 subs. 18 of 21 wins with 16 knockouts. Incredible. All 3 of his losses have came by knockout. Debuted on Dana White's Contender Series in September 2023. 3-minute knockout. 3-minute knockout, debuted in March of last year with what ended up being in the top five, you could even argue top three, knockouts of the year with a flying knee with 19 seconds left over Bernardo Sopage. I mean, it was crazy. It was crazy. Vincius had me going nuts. He won a fight of the night and a performance of the night in his debut. That's 100K right there. That's 100K. Next up in June, he took on Ricky Simon and honestly took it to him. It was tough. You know, Ricky threw 2 of 11 takedowns on him, only managed 31 seconds of control time, got better striking as the fight went on, outstruck him 40 to 11 and took him down with 10 seconds left in that fight. So Vinicius Oliveira is super talented. It's here's my observation. On the feet, this is Vinicius Oliveira's fight all freaking day, but this is on the ground. This is in Saudi Arabia. In Saudi Arabia, the judges are biased. This is known. In Abu Dhabi and Saudi Arabia, the judges are biased. It's just a known thing. When Ricky Simon landed 2 takedowns on Vincius, Vincius was just significantly bigger than him and was able to keep getting up. In the Bernardo Sopage fight, both guys were kind of not as experienced as each other, but, you know, Bernardo landed 3 of 4 takedowns, 4.5 minutes control time. If Saeed gets him down, he's going to control him. If Saeed gets him down, he's going to control him. And I think this is going to be one of those cases where you get another close decision. And unlike the past, I think this is going to go to Saeed Nurmagomedov. And this isn't even knocking Vinicius Oliveira, but I just think Saeed is smart enough to not get caught on the feet. He's going to want to grab the neck. He could even get a submission on the ground. But I think Saeed Nurmagomedov beats Vinicius Oliveira this Saturday. After that fight, we get into my favorite three. My favorite three. I'm so excited. And we kick it off. I can't believe this is just the third fight on a main card. I mean, I feel so gifted. As the number 4 and the number 9 ranked heavyweights, Sergey Pavlovich and Jarzinho Biggie Boy Rozenstruik do battle. Sergey 18-3, Jarzinho 15-5. 6'3 to 6'2. Sergey has 1 inch in height, and he has a very notable, do want to add this, very notable 6 inches in reach, 84 to 78. Southpaw with the left for Sergey, orthodox with the right for Jarzinho Rozenstruik. Sergey's coming in minus 300. Okay, plus 240 for Jarzinho. He's the big favorite. He's the big favorite in this one. So it's tough going. It's tough going in this one, but we'll have to see what happens. Sergey, 32 years old from Russia, 18 wins, 15 knockouts. We know this. We know this. Okay, and of those 15 knockouts, they've all came in round number one. I mean, this guy's a one-and-done fighter as it goes. I mean, he has had 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 UFC fights, and 8 of them have ended in round number one. Now, we all know Sergey's case. Debuts in 2018, gets humbled by Alistair Overeem, suffers his first defeat. Then goes on a 6-fight win streak, including round one knockouts of Derek Lewis, Tai Tuivasa, and his biggest win of his career, Curtis Blaydes. Takes on Tom Aspinall, just gets caught. But little did we know at the time. Like, we knew Tom Aspinall was good, but now we know Tom Aspinall is really good. Okay, returned in June of 2024 and had a weird fight against Alexander Volkov. I think when people look at that and see a decision, they just don't understand. They were forced to fight each other. Okay, Volkov and Sergey were training partners, they were buddies, and they were forced to fight each other by the UFC on their contract. So I think that's just something overlooked. Sergey definitely didn't look as hungry. He barely threw. He got outstruck 83 to 46. I mean, it was a pretty boring fight. Okay, it was actually the last time they were in Saudi Arabia, so I'm hoping we see a different Sergey here. But there's just a lot of context there that I just don't think people are going to be bringing up. So Sergey should be back to his roots, should be back to his game plan as he takes on Biggie Boy, Jarzinho Rozenstruik. Jarzinho, of course, the underdog in this one, 36 from Suriname in Africa. I believe Suriname's in Africa. 13 knockouts of 15 career wins. Pretty similar to Sergey Pavlovich. Hasn't gotten a knockout, though, technically, since 2024. He had that weird win over Shamil Gaziev, but the last knockout he actually got, 2022. Chris Daukaus. That was very impressive. Look, Jarzinho, he's just gotten the rough end of things. He truly, truly has, you know. Listen to the guys he has lost to. Francis Ngannou, Cyril Gane, Curtis Blaydes, Alexander Volkov, Halton Almeida. So right there, you have the former champion before John Jones. You have the number one ranked fighter. You have the number two ranked fighter. You have the number three. You also have the number five. You have the number six. You have all these top guys. Okay, so Jarzinho finally on a little win streak here, though. He beat Shamil Gaziev in 2024. And then the Tai Tuivasa decision. It's one of the worst decisions I've seen in my entire life. Jarzinho outstruck him 91-37. 91-37. You had a judge, Howie Booth, score the entire fight for Tai Tuivasa. I mean, I understand There were no knockdowns. It was just distance striking, but it was one of the worst scorecards I've ever seen. So Jairzinho coming in off of two lackluster performances. Look, it's always going to be safe to pick Sergey Pavlovich round number one, and we're not changing here. And I think he is. I think this is literally going to be two guys going at it right. And I'm talking two gladiators walking straight to the center of the ring. They're going to start swinging. And I, just from observation, I think Sergey hits harder. Now, don't be surprised if Jairzinho catches him. You know, I won't be too surprised. I'll be a little bit of a shock. I'll be like, no, Sergey Pavlovich, because I'm a Sergey Pavlovich fan. But if Jairzinho wins, it would be kind of a feel-good moment. And you have to think, the winner of this will be ranked number four. Okay, the winner of this will be ranked number four. And we'll be primed for a big, big opportunity next. So this is a crucial point in the careers for both of these men, especially Sergey, two-fight losing streak, especially Jairzinho, two-fight winning streak. This is pivotal. I'm going with Sergey Pavlovich. It should be very entertaining. After that, the co-main event, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, talk about just the UFC going, let's make a fantasy booking fight. Let's just make a fight that no one will see coming, and we can just make it because we can. Middleweight action. As the number 14 ranked Shahram Magomedov at middleweight takes on the number 15th ranked welterweight Michael Venom Page. Shara the Bullet, Michael Venom Page. MVP versus the Bullet. This is going to be a fantastic fight. Shara is the minus 185 favorite. Michael Page is the plus 155 underdog. Shara 15-0, undefeated. Michael Page 22-3. He's only lost to tough competitors, too. 6'3 to 6'2 gives Page 1-inch in height, and he has a notable 6 inches in reach. 79-73 over Shara. Orthodox for Shara. And it says switch for Michael Page, but you got to watch MVP fight to see what stance he is in. He is in one of the most goofy stances I've ever seen. Shara, the Bullet, 30 years old, from Russia. Of his 15 wins, 12 knockouts. We already know him. He's gotten better with every UFC appearance. Debuted against Bruno Silva, was showing some crazy up kicks from the ground, kicking him in the head. Then takes on Antonio Tricoli, finally works out the kinks, and gets his first UFC finish. Then has a fight of the night in August against Michael Olkajacek. Michael just won't go away. He also survives from grappling in that. Good showing from Shara. And then October 26, 2024, UFC 308, a double spinning back fist knockout over Armin Petrosian. One of the top five KOs of the entire year. Incredible. Got a performance bonus for that. Shara Magomedov, he's a stud. He's a star. You know, massive on social media. He actually shared this story during fight week how he was going to go train with Khabib's father, but Khabib's father had a couple rules. It was you must shave your head, and you know you can't have long hair, you have to show up to training on time, and you cannot stay out late. And Shara was like, you know what, that's not me. So he's been off doing his own thing. But yes, he is from Dagestan. He's only 30. He's 15-0, and he is poised to have a massive, massive year if he can get past. That is MVP, veteran of the game, 37 years old, from London, England. 16 finishes and 22 career wins, 12 by knockout, 4 by sub. He actually won his last matchup he had, not in MMA, but in just combat sports, when he won a grappling match versus Carlos Condit on November 1st. How weird. That's the last time he won. But in MMA, 1-1 in the UFC so far. Debuted in March of last year. Law beat Kevin Holland. Then in June, fought Ian Machado Gary. Both of those fights, kind of awkward. It's just how MVP fights. You know, even when he looks like he's losing, he's doing enough to make it look like he's winning. So two lackluster fights through his first two career matchups in the UFC. I'm seeing this as fight of the night potential. Okay, because here's the thing. We've watched both of these guys fight. Both of these guys don't grapple. That's the thing. So if one of these guys chooses to grapple, this is where they could gain an edge. But to do fan service, I think these two are going to strike. They have weird striking antics, if you will. This is my fight of the night. And here's the thing. I'm going to go Shara. I'm going to drink the Kool-Aid, as they say. He's undefeated. It's in Saudi Arabia. They want him to win. He's in the co-main event. Here's the thing. These guys can both get caught with a punch from one another and go out. I think MVP hits harder, but I think Shara has more techniques that land. I'm going to give accuracy to Shara and volume, but to MVP, I'm going to give power. Okay, now mind you, these two do not strike orthodox. You know, you got an orthodox stance on Shara, you got switch stance from MVP. These are the two most unorthodox strikers that I've ever witnessed. This is going to be such a fun fight. It is currently January 30th as I'm wrapping up the recording of this, and I just want to make sure that these two can make it to the octagon and fight one another because it's going to be such a fantastic matchup. But we're going to go with Shara. I think it'll be close. I think we're going to see a little bit of blood. I think we're going to see multiple knockdowns in this fight. I'm excited. I hope they don't grapple, but if one of them does grapple, I don't blame them. That's the path to victory. Shara Magomedov over MVP in a fight of the night. With that, ladies and gentlemen, we get to the main event. The number two ranked middleweight in the world, Israel, the last stylebender, Adesanya, takes on the number five ranked middleweight in the world, Nazardeen, the sniper, Imavov. Nazardeen, you just gave yourself that. He was not the sniper before. What is this? The sniper? What are we doing here, Nazardeen? I kind of like it, though. Nazardeen, the sniper, Imavov. That is a new nickname. There's no way he had that nickname before. Izzy, minus 180 favorite. You already know. Nazardeen, plus 150 underdog. 24-4 for the last stylebender, the former men's middleweight champion. 15-4 with one no contest for the rising up-and-comer, Nazardeen Imavov. 6-4 to 6-3, his two are pretty even, but Izzy's got the height. He also has a very notable 80-75 5-inch reach advantage. Switch stance for Izzy. You already know the name of the game for him. Orthodox. Nazardeen keeps a pretty tight, keeps a pretty regular stance when he's fighting. Izzy, 35. You know, it's crazy to think 35 years old, he's already one of the greatest MMA fighters we've ever seen. From New Zealand, also from Nigeria. He's also had the China flag, the American flag. Where is Izzy's loyalty, really? We don't really know. 16 knockouts of his 24 career victories. Izzy is in flux right now. Izzy is in flux, you know. At one point, 20-0. He was 20-0 before the pandemic hit. And then post-pandemic, he's gone 4-4. You know, it's been tough, but I do want to add, the only men to beat Israel Adesanya, Jan Blachowicz, Alex Pereira, Sean Strickland, DDP, that is the last two light heavyweight champions. Obviously, you have Jiří and Jamal in there, but you get what I'm saying about light heavyweight, and the last two middleweight champions. So he's only lost to the best of the best. Clarification, the Jan Blachowicz one, it's up in weight at light heavyweight. You know, he got all grappled in the final two rounds. The Alex Pereira one, that one is just, that rivalry will live in infamy forever. This will live in infamy forever. And Sean Strickland, I just think Izzy wasn't underestimated him. I truly believe he did. And the DDP fight, I mean, DDP just had his number. Emotionally, Izzy was not there. And I think this is an Izzy in this matchup where it will tell if he is going to go on a Tony Ferguson, Tyron Woodley spiral to end his career, or if he's going to have a career resurgence like, let me say, I don't even know who to pick. Who's one of the greatest champions of all time that managed to get back to the belt? I don't even know. But Izzy, this is going to be a crucial win for him. This is going to be a very crucial win. This is his first non-title fight since February of 2019. Utterly insane. It's been a rough going. He's 1-3 in his last four. This is a must win. And Izzy, man, we're going to be rooting for him, but it's going to be tough as he takes on the young, hungry up-and-comer, Nazardeen, the sniper, Imavov. I can't get over the sniper nickname. 28 years old from Russia, but now trains in France. I don't know where he's actually represents. You know, he represents Russia, represents the French. I don't know. 10 finishes and 15 career wins, 6 knockouts, 4 subs. Never been finished. 4 losses, never been finished. Nazardeen, he's done pretty stellar. 7-2 with one no contest in the UFC. Those losses, he was outgrappled while he was in February of 2021. He was very, very underdeveloped when he took on Phil Haas, managed to get some wins. Takes on Sean Strickland in Sean Strickland's prime in 2023. Okay, Sean Strickland might have won Fighter of the Year in 2023. Honestly, that was an insane year for him, as Nazardeen was unfortunately just not really ready for him. Then has a no contest against Chris Curtis after a headbutt, but 2024 rolls around, and what do we have here? What do we have here? You may ask. We have Nazardeen coming into his prime. Coming into his prime here, and all is right in the world. All is right in the world as he picks up a decision win over Roman Dolidze in a main event, gets a TKO over Jared Cannonier in a main event, and then beats Brendan Allen in front of his French home country, however he wants to say where he's from. I don't know. Here's the context here. Here's the context. We already know everything about Izzy. Okay, what you need to know about Nazardeen, though, is on this win streak, he has just had, he's almost like an Aljamain Sterling type of vibe to him. I can't lie. The Roman Dolidze fight almost finishes him in round one, proceeds to kind of gas out throughout the entire fight. The Jared Cannonier fight. Jared is up on the scorecards heading into round number four. And, you know, he's losing the round, but it was just a bad stoppage. It was a bad stoppage. He was wobbly, but it wasn't wobbly enough where you should stop the fight. Okay, so kind of a bad stoppage there for Nazarene. And the Brendan Allen fight, it's just, he gassed out. He freaking gassed out. And Brendan Allen, if Brendan Allen was smart and would go lead on the striking, might have knocked out Nazarene in round number three. So it's going to be tough to see what Nazarene we get. But in my opinion, Izzy survives the early onslaught. He maybe gets taken down, maybe faces some big punches, but he comes around and in a karmic sense of whatever you want to call it, karma hitting, Imavov gets TKO'd in round number four on the feet from Israel Adesanya. Maybe even Izzy gets one of his highlight reel knockouts where he actually knocks the guy out cold. I don't know, but we're going to ride with Izzy, man. You know, I haven't been riding with him. I haven't picked him in so long. I've been riding with Pereira, riding with Strickland, riding with DDP. I think it's time I go back to my roots, root for Adesanya. And mind you, he's a weird dude. Mind you, he said this is the longest he's abstained from jerking off or sex, and he is horny all the time. Like, Izzy, what are you saying? What do you say? That does not strike fear to Nazarene Imavov. That just means when he's grappling you, he's going to be like, wait a second, is he lacking this? Does he lack another man pushing up on him? I don't know. What can I say? But I'm going Israel Adesanya to get his 17th career knockout in round number four and to win the fight. I'm super excited. It's going to be a great card. It truly is. Winner of this one will be ranked number two in the world. And I think we brought this up on the last episode. The winner of this fight is getting the next title shot. Let me just tell you, the winner of this is getting the next title shot. Now, that comes after Khamzat. I think the winner of Sean Strickland, DDP, whether Sean gets it done or not, I think you got to give Khamzat the title shot. But then the winner of this matchup just deserves a title shot. They truly do. And, you know, Izzy, he's like a Kamaru Usman. He's like a Leon Edwards. He's like a Colby Covington, like a Conor McGregor. These guys are always going to be one win away from a title shot. It's just how it works in the business. So we'll have to see what happens. But this card is absolutely fantastic. And I'm excited to see what happens. So just a brief little recap. We're going with Jamal Pogues by decision, starting on the first prelim. Bogdan Grodd, we'll say round one knockout. Jasmine Jesse DeVicious, decision. Fairzayam, I'm going to say decision. Chance McKinney, round one knockout. Shamil Gaziev, round one knockout. Muhammad Naimov, decision, or maybe a late finish. Oh no. Sayed Nurmagomedov, decision. Sergey Pavlovich, round one knockout. Shara by decision, and Izzy with a little knockout. Absolutely. Should be a fun time in the world of UFC. But ladies and gentlemen, that's all we got for today's episode. It is super nice out now. My voice is still not recovered from, oh my gosh, the coaching. Coaching is fun, guys. Let me tell you, coaching a hockey team is so fun, especially when I'm not actually a real coach. I don't know anything about it, but it does doozy on the voice. It really does a doozy. We're going to be having a special guest hopefully coming on this weekend. We'll have to see. But as for now, I'll leave you with all this. You know, you got your Royal Rumble predictions. You got my thoughts on the Super Bowl, and you got my UFC Saudi Arabian predictions. Guys, have a fantastic weekend. Have a fantastic life, and make sure to catch you now. I'll make sure. I think that's how I should say it. And I'll make sure to catch you, or maybe you'll make sure to catch me next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.